Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Dale Falwell. He is the North Carolina State Treasurer, and he's been in the news lately because he has proposed some important changes to the state health plan, which, as Treasurer of North Carolina, he administers. He's the administrator of health plan, and which covers hundreds of thousands of people in North Carolina. Generally, what Treasurer Falwell has proposed is that the state health plan, rather than paying what the hospitals and doctors bills or whatever agreement that they've got, that basically the rates will be based on the Medicare rates, which are much lower, and there would be an increment over and above that, but it would nevertheless be much less out of the pockets of the state employees and retired state employees, and more out of there would be less paid by the taxpayers. Dale Falwell, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
Have I summarized your proposal correctly? And whether I have or not, how about supplementing and
sure,
giving us the background?
Yeah, I'd be glad to put that in context. And I'm grateful to have time with you on this program, because you have a lot of listeners that are very interested and concerned about what happens with not only the state health plan, but the state pension plan. You know very well one of my predecessors, Harlan Bowles, who wrote the book, The Keeper of the Public Purse. And when Treasurer Bowles was the treasurer of North Carolina, being the keeper of the public purse did not include the oversight of the state health plan, but now it does. So in context, let me just tell your listeners why this should matter to them, whether they're on the plan or not. Number one is size. This state health plan has as many participants in it that then work for three companies that I'm going to mention combined in the United States. The state health plan has over 720,000 participants, and that's almost equal to the amount of people that work for Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway, Jamie Dimon's J.P. Morgan, and Jeff Bezos' Amazon combined. That's how large this plan is. Let's talk about money.
Let me, Dale, just to put it in context out of the numbers, I'm a participant as a retired state employee.
That's right.
Is that right?
And
our public school teachers would be participants as well?
Teachers, troopers, community college members, all across the state, people that work at the parks and the ports and all the above.
And in Chapel Hill, university employees.
We got
a bunch of them. So if you live in a town like Chapel Hill or like some other university town or other place where Raleigh or other places where the employees of state government are strong, it approaches the majority of the population. I mean, there are a lot of us who are covered. So what difference? So you're going to tell us what difference it makes.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and if you look at not just the urban areas that you just mentioned, but in the rural parts of North Carolina, I believe in many instances the largest check that comes into that community every 30 days are the checks that come from the treasurer's office, either in terms of health care or pension benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So we're about to talk about money. The state health plan that you and many members are participants in, the state health plan this year is going to spend over $3 billion. Now, to put that in context for your listeners, what does $3 billion represent? That represents more money than gets appropriated to the entire university system. That represents more money than gets appropriated to all of the justice and public safety of our state, from the deputy sheriff all the way to the chief justice of the Supreme Court. So it's one of these invisible things. Everybody knows what public safety and justice is. Everybody knows what the university system is. But it's one of these invisible things that is one of the largest expenditures in the state. And so as keepers of the public purse, what we're trying to do is take advantage of our largeness on behalf of the active and retired employees of this state. And we're doing that with the Clear Pricing Project, which is what we call reference-based pricing, which you've already mentioned. You can't cut the cost of anything until you know what it costs. And reference-based pricing is our Medicare reimbursement rates, plus on average 82% above that, with a special emphasis for primary care physicians getting more money, mental health specialists getting more money, and in many instances, rural hospitals getting more money. We think that the success and the accessibility and affordability of health care, especially in rural North Carolina, is based on independent doctors, independent mental health specialists, and independent successful hospitals. And that is the cornerstone of our program.
How do you, I want to get back, of course, to the big players, the hospitals and so forth, but how do you come to an agreement with an individual doctor or another health care provider about what he or she can charge and get reimbursed from the state health plan?
Another terrific question. Many of your listeners have one of these cards in their pocket like you and I do. And for nearly four decades, on the front of that card, it said Blue Cross Blue Shield. When they got an explanation of benefit in the mail, which, by the way, and I say this sarcastically, it doesn't explain the benefit of anything. And it had Blue Cross Blue Shield. Occasionally, when they would get a check back because they may have overpaid a copay, it had Blue Cross Blue Shield. Why would people not think that Blue Cross Blue Shield is the insurer for the state health plan? They are not and never have been. All they are is a third-party administrator that does the back office administering the plan. This plan is self-funded. So going back to your point earlier, the reason this should matter is that the first thing we're doing is educating our participants in this plan that anytime they pull that insurance card out of their pocket, we want them to think as deeply as they do when they pull a debit or credit card out of their pocket. And that is to be able to figure out what the value and the price is of what they're getting.
Well, Dale, let me get back to the question about in trying to determine how it works now and then how it's going to be different. The individual practitioner, not affiliated with a hospital or group,
yes,
or something, and that person treats somebody in the health plan,
mm-hmm,
sends a bill,
sure,
to the administrator who,
right,
decides how much can pay. How is it decided how much I can charge for a routine, mm-hmm, health visit now?
Well, I apologize, and thank you for getting me back on track. We have 61,000 providers, but the state health plan, even though we're self-funded, we have no contracts with any provider, zero. So all the contracts are between Blue Cross Blue Shield and the provider themselves. So when somebody goes and consumes health care, that provider sends that bill to Blue Cross Blue Shield, who administers that bill and then sends us obviously a schedule of what we owe for that. So that's what goes on currently.
Who decides what that schedule is?
Blue Cross Blue Shield, and we do not have access to that.
Why don't it's you're the customer of you've hired Blue Cross Blue Shield. Why can't you, and I'm assuming that the,
sure,
changes in the state health plan will permit you to say,
right,
we want some input into the schedule. How does Blue Cross Blue Shield decide what the schedule is?
Well, it's their negotiation, and you know, we're part of that network. And what I have been saying, and what we've been saying for the last year, is that we know what we're paying. We don't know what we're supposed to pay. It would be like you going to the Harris Teeter and just going up and down the aisle picking up stuff and never really knowing what you paid until you got to the checkout. So what's going to be different with the reference-based pricing is that we're going to be standing up something inside of Blue Cross called the North Carolina State Health Plan Network. And that network now is going to be tying us more with these providers. And providers are very excited about it. We have tens of thousands of doctors that are actually going to get pay raises as a result of this plan because we're trying to get more money to primary care physicians and mental health specialists especially because, you know, their number one job is to actually provide care to the patient and try to keep them out of hospitals. And that's good for the patient, and that's good for the state health plan's financial condition also.
So, Dale, before we take a break, just one more question. So in this case, while the attention has been focused on the reference to Medicare, you might be paying individual providers throughout the state more than the Medicare plus 80%?
Yes. Some of them are going to be over 200.
Now, are you just making that decision because you like them and you think they're good people?
We're making that decision because any study that you would read would show that money spent with primary care physicians is money well spent.
Go ahead.
It's better for the patient, and it gives us better patient outcomes. But the reason I often use the word independent is simply this. If a doctor wants to send me somewhere to get my knee imaged or my heart imaged, I want them to have the ability to send me to the place that has the highest quality, lowest cost for that particular procedure. And we have example after example that's coming into our office every day of people who are asking these simple questions, the same question you ask before you buy a tank of gasoline or a Pepsi Cola. Where's the value in the price? And it's remarkable what people are telling us, how they're able to cut healthcare costs by simply asking some of the basic questions that they ask in every other aspect of their life when they consume something.
Well, we've got more questions. If you join us late, I'm visiting with Dale Falwell, who is our state North Carolina state treasurer, who's made a proposal with respect to changes in the state health plan, and he's been kind enough to explain some of them to us, and we'll be right back to talk to him about some of the others. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is North Carolina State Treasurer Dale Falwell. Dale's been in the news lately because the treasurer administers the state health plan, and he has proposed some changes. I would say they're controversial. He's been kind enough to explain some of them to us. What do you say? The negative reaction to your plan seems to be coming primarily from larger providers, and it would include another important institution here in Chapel Hill. Our hospital here would be have an impact. And why are the hospitals and larger providers complaining about this?
Well, number one is that, you know, there's no secret that our goal here is to cut $300 million out of the cost of the system. And the reason is the state health plan is going to run out of money in about 3 years. And let me put this in context. As great as our AAA bond rating is, as great as running budget surpluses, as great as all those, as our pension plan is strong, the state health plan, according to Pew Research, its insolvency is ranked right behind the state of Illinois, the same Illinois that your listeners have been hearing about regarding financial troubles along the lines of health care and pension. And you should be asking yourself right away, how could the treasurer be saying that the pension is one of the best and the health plan is one of the most insolvent? And the answer is not political or emotional, it's mathematical. For nearly 40 years, promises were made to state employees to provide basic, to be eligible for lifetime health care, but no money had ever been put aside for that purpose, zero. Unlike the pension plan, where every state employee, contrary to popular belief, has taken money off their hip pocket every month, the employer they work for has taken money out every month. Those two things have been contributed to the pension plan, and that money grows over 30 years. The state health plan is the exact opposite. So the reason this is important is that we need to save $300 million a year in the state health plan. How do we come up with that number? I met with 42 of the stakeholders, the hospitals, the doctors, the pediatricians, the mental health, legislative staff, insurance companies. Everybody was there. And I asked the simple question, how much waste, fraud, and abuse do you think there is in the system? And the minimum answer we received, DG, was 12 to 15%. I said, fantastic. We're going to be able to work together here. If you tell me there's 12 to 15% waste, fraud, and abuse in the system, go find that and bring it back to us as the operator of the state health plan, and I promise you we will operationalize every single thing that you recommend. We heard crickets for months. Then I sent a request to UNC Healthcare and said, we know that last year we sent over $300 million of state health plan money to UNC Healthcare on behalf of state employees and retirees. So he said, we know what we're being charged. Would you give us a price list so that we can figure out what we're supposed to pay? And that's when we received the infamous 240 pages that were completely redacted. Every single line was completely blacked out about what we, the customer, are supposed to pay. So when the stakeholders say there's 12 to 15% waste, fraud, and abuse, when our biggest customer will not tell us what we're supposed to pay, then it's our responsibilities when, as fiduciaries, it's not a word people use every day, but all it means is to be loyal and exercise a duty of care to the people you're responsible for. So we came up with reference-based pricing, which basically puts complete sunshine on health care, because no one in this state consumes health care. It consumes them.
Explain the reference-based pricing.
Reference-based pricing is something that's been developed over the last 40 years by CMS, federal, and it has to do with Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement rates. Ours specifically is Medicare. And I want to tell your listeners, getting up in years, and Medicare reimbursement rates are based on the risk factors of somebody my age, not somebody who's 28 years old. So they're actually higher. So what we decided is that we figured out how much money we need to save. Then we went and looked at reference-based pricing with these three main goals in mind. We know that doctors are having a hard time staying in business. We know that they're having to run to the arms of these major medical centers. We know that when that happens, there's a chance that prices will end up going up dramatically over the next 3 or 5 years. So why don't we exalt and affirm financially primary care doctors? Why don't we affirm mental health specialists? You know, and why don't we affirm and try to help some of these rural hospitals stay independent? So the ones that are balking are ones that are charging us rates far higher than what we're proposing. We have some providers that are charging us 600 and 700% of Medicare reimbursement rates. 600 and 700%, 6 to 7 times the Medicare reimbursement rates. So all we're doing is trying to figure out what's right, get it right, and keep it right on behalf of the state employees, the retirees, and obviously taxpayers like them who end up funding 83% of this cost.
Well, what is their what's their basic strong point in arguing with you about your plan? And I think you've described it, which is to cut down significantly the reimbursement that would be to these larger providers, including hospitals throughout the state. Mm-hmm. What's their point?
Well, they want me to sign on to something called value-based medicine. And I don't care if it's the car you're driving or the shirt you happen to be wearing today. You can't value anything in life unless you know what the price is. And value-based medicine, there is also a concept of value-based management medicine that we need to align the incentives with the doctors. And these are words that they have used, and I'll just paraphrase. We need to align the incentive so that doctors have the financial incentive to manage the care of the patient. Well, I'm 60 years old, and I've always thought that the incentive and the reason that people become doctors is always to be in line with what's in the best interest of the patient. So I don't know what's really new about that, but at the end of the day, we know there's a lot of things going on in healthcare. We know that many of the healthcare organizations across this state have billions, billions of dollars more money in the bank than the state does in the rainy day fund. And we know that, optimistically, we have enough providers, we have enough medical needs because of the sheer size of this plan, and we have enough billions of dollars that we ought to be able to figure it out and lead the nation out of this situation that we're in.
If you joined us late, I'm visiting with State Treasurer Dale Falwell. We're talking about his responsibility as State Treasurer to administer and be responsible for the state health plan, and we're talking about some of the changes. He and I will continue the conversation after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is our North Carolina State Treasurer, Dale Falwell. Dale does a lot of things, and someday we'll have him back to talk about some of the other things that he does, which are important in our lives. But right now we're talking about health care. Many of us, particularly all state employees, teachers, college professors, employees of the university, are participants in the state health plan, and to some extent they get a great deal, but to some extent they have to, there are at times when they have to contribute. So Dale, as the state treasurer and the administrator of the state health plan, has proposed a dramatic change in how the state health plan will reimburse the providers of health care to state employees and retirees. There, we've been talking about some of them, and I've been trying to get you to explain why the larger providers, why the hospitals throughout the state, what their point is. And let me try to summarize it, and then you correct me to the extent that I'm wrong. But a large part of the resistance to the proposals that the treasurer has made are based on what will happen to the institutions who are now, I guess, the beneficiaries of substantially higher reimbursement than the treasurer proposes. And it's put in the categories of, we're going to lose a lot of local hospitals, a lot of other providers in parts of the state will not be able to stay in existence, and that this plan that's that Dale has proposed is going to put a lot of great health care providers throughout the state out of business. And that's what I've been hearing, Dale. Aren't you hearing that objection? And if so, how are you responding to it?
Well, number one, you know, we've never closed a hospital. The people who are saying that have. Number two, from all the time that you've spent around the General Assembly, you've known for probably almost 20 years now that the organizations have been predicting that the number of hospitals in North Carolina could possibly fall by half by the year 2025. And the reason is there's lots of reasons for that. I'm trying to do the opposite. I'm trying to make sure that these rural hospitals can remain independent and profitable and open. And the pure evidence of what I said and what you said is this. When we recently expanded the definition of what a rural hospital was, and we did that not because of pressure, because what we do with this is that we're always looking out for new information or a better way of looking at old information. And we realized that the definition that was given to us by the federal government was too tight. And now we've expanded that not from 21 rural hospitals to over 70 things that we now classify as rural health care. So we have acknowledged that of the plight that's going on in rural health care. But the fact is that many of these, especially the larger facilities, are charging us reimbursement rates far in excess of what anybody could possibly imagine. And what's happening is the state employees and the retirees have been subsidizing the cost, the revenue, and the profit of everything else that goes on in the hospital. That is not our responsibility with the state health plan. We are our governmental purchaser of insurance. We should be able to be entitled to the same great rates that other governmental purchasers of insurance are entitled to. And I'll give you two examples, and I hope this comes across clearly on your show. Prisoners, for example, when they need medical care right now, by agreement for years, they get reimbursed at 140%. The provider does.
140% of what? Be sure you of Medicare.
Medicare. People, unfortunately, who occasionally are injured on the job and are workers' comp claimants, they get reimbursed at 140%. Blue Cross Blue Shield came out with a product last year, a reference-based price, and it reimburses at 140%. We're offering 180% on average, nearly twice as much profit as these other things that I've just mentioned. So we think we're being extremely fair with these providers, but the main thing is that not only do we have to cut cost, but we have to have transparency. We are hearing examples of people in Charlotte who can get a rotator cuff surgery for $25,000, and just a couple of miles down the road, it could cost $75,000. People getting knee replacements in the Southern Pines area, for example, that may cost $18,000, but up in the Chapel Hill, Raleigh, Duke, Durham area, it could be as much as $28,000 to $33,000. I mean, the disparity on what health care costs across the street from providers from each other is absolutely astounding.
Dale, excuse me for interrupting you, but this is important for me. You say that there are different charges in different areas of the state, but would Medicare have a standard that it would be applicable across the country for a knee replacement? If a Medicare person has to get a knee replacement, it's going to be reimbursed at the same price, no matter what the hospital charges or whatever the common rate is in that community.
Fantastic question. The Medicare reimbursement rates are so adjusted that it, in some cases in North Carolina, it's by the zip code. So it's not across the country. These rates exist just for in North Carolina, for example, even though it's a Medicare reimbursement rate. So all those factors are taken into account, and that's why this is so important. And I hope we have time, or I will say this. Any dollar that's unnecessarily, I underscore the word unnecessarily, spent in health care is a dollar that can never, ever be spent on public education, can never be spent on public safety, can never be spent on public roads or the ports or the parks or any other core function of state government. And that's why, as the keeper of the public purse, we're so focused on saving money and taking advantage of our largeness, giving the state employees the prices that they have deserved for a long time, and to make sure that this plan is sustainable for the next generation of public service workers.
Now, you've explained to us how the state's going to save money if this plan is implemented.
Yes.
How does the individual participant in the state health care plan save money?
Exactly. Great question. When we started out with our $300 million worth of savings, there was going to be $66 million on top of that. Because when you reduce the cost of health care, then therefore your co-pays are lower and your deductibles are lower. So that's how the individual member, it wouldn't affect so much the people who are over 65 on the Medicare Advantage program, mm-hmm. because we've negotiated one rate for the prescriptions and everything on their behalf. But anybody under the age of 65, and we'll call that on average, DG, about 580,000 people, this will impact them directly in a very positive way, because when we lower health care costs, it lowers their out-of-pocket expense. When we originally started our proposal, over $65 million in savings per year.
Wow. Well, Dale, thanks. I want to take a break and come back and talk about the politics of this proposal, and then to talk, if I can get you to a little bit, as a political expert, to talk a little bit about the political scene in North Carolina and the country. If you join us late, I'm visiting with Dale Falwell. He's our state treasurer. He's the administrator. He runs the state health plan, and he's been talking to us about some of the changes that he's proposed, and he and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Having a stimulating conversation for me with Dale Falwell. He's our state treasurer. Dale does a lot of things that we don't hear about, and we'll get him back someday to talk about them. But we've been talking about his proposal essentially to modify the state health plan, save money for the state and for some of the people who are covered by the state health plan by adjusting the reimbursement rates and in lowering them in large part to save hundreds of millions of dollars. Dale, so you do such a good job of explaining this. Why is people in the legislature and other people talking about how they need to put a stop to this?
Well, people do things for their reasons and not necessarily ours. And I don't say this glowingly, and it's a reflection of what's going on nationally, but there are a lot of public servants who the only thing they're really good at is not doing their job. And our job is at the treasurer's office is to be the keeper of the public purse, which means all we're supposed to be doing is making money in the pension plan and saving money elsewhere. So we don't spend a penny or buy a paper clip of using taxpayers' money unless we think about that. So, you know, they're saying what they're saying for their reasons. But the fact is that as I said in an earlier segment, the North Carolina health plan, state health plan, has nearly a $32 billion deficit. It's one of the largest in the United States.
Now, Dale, I don't mean to be impolite, but tell us what's going on with the politics of the people who are in opposition, and how are they doing, and what are you doing to counter that, and how do you think it will work out in the long run?
Yeah, well, a great question. They've introduced a piece of legislation that basically stops us from saving money or reforming the state health plan for a great number of years. So that piece of legislation has passed the House, and it has not been heard in the Senate. So that's what they're doing. We don't have a lobbyist. We don't spend money. We can't spend money on folks through lobbying and other means to get things done in the legislature. All we have to offer is good government. And so,
is the opposition bipartisan, or is it concentrated among the Democrats or the Republicans? Just break down on.
Yeah.
Is that something
The Republican caucus, if you look at the vote total, is basically split down the middle, and the Democratic caucus is not supporting what I'm trying to do.
I see. So you're a Republican, so your guys are divided. The Democrats are united in opposition, or not united, but are more or less in opposition. And what is the politics of this? What's driving? Is it just a political matter to keep you from saving money, or is it a matter where the other interests that you described for us, at least initially, are more powerful than the urge to save money?
Well, I agree with what you just said, but you know, for the record, we've never been able to present our plan to either the caucuses in the House of Representatives. So we've offered many times to say, you know, Kelly King gave a speech in Raleigh the other day, and he said, you know, if you focus on the why, we can figure out the how. So what I've tried to do on your show and with anybody who would listen is explain them why we're having to do this. But we think that message is getting out. We have doctors who are calling us every day wanting to sign our contracts because they realize that we are now understanding where the money needs to be spent in healthcare. It needs to be spent on primary care and mental health. That's what keeps people out of the hospitals, and that's what lowers the cost of healthcare for all of us. So that's sort of the politics of it. But all we have to offer people is good government. And like in so many instances in our country, people don't want to be informed. They just want to be affirmed about how they already think about something. And I'm in the business of trying to inform them of why this is necessary.
Well, what we've been talking about is nonpartisan. You and I are generally on different sides of the political spectrum, but we're probably both alert and worried about about the future of politics in our country. And I wonder if you you don't have time, you know, to be preaching politics, but step out of your political and your job as state treasurer. But you're interested in politics, and what worries you, or what reassurances can you give us for those who are worried about political situation in America today?
Yeah, well, I'm concerned about what I just said, is that people don't want to be informed, they want to be affirmed. And it just sort of reminds me back in the 60s when, you know, the Beatles went off tour. And you may recall there was a conversation between John and Paul, and John said, "Paul, can you hear me sing?" And John said, "No." And John and they asked, "Can you hear me sing?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, if we can't hear each other sing and the audience can't hear us sing because everybody's screaming past each other, why are we doing this tour thing? Why don't we just go back to Europe and cut some albums?" That's really what happened in the 60s. And that's where we are. People are just screaming past each other. And that's my major, major concern about this. And I appreciate you saying something about our relationship, because all that you've ever heard me talk about from the time you've known me, we've known each other 13 years now, is that I'm always focused on saving a mind, saving a life, or saving money.
Right.
Every piece of legislation I've ever offered, and some people that you and I are very, very close to, you more than I, understand that anything that I've ever signed my name to as a primary sponsor has to do with saving minds, saving lives, or saving money. And here, obviously, is the state treasurer and the keeper of the public purse. I'm most focused on saving money. And it's very important, and I just want to add that just over the last few weeks, Warren Buffett has said the following, kind of put a bow on all of this. Warren Buffett said that any business in the country who's thinking about expanding or relocating their company had better look at what the unfunded pension and health care liabilities are of not only the community, but the state that they're going to.
Well, Dale, let me first of all, thank you. I mean, I'm progressive or whatever it is, but I worry about the underfunding, and I'm worried more about my nation. It'd be terrible if North Carolina, if the health plan goes bankrupt, or if we are not able to pay our bonds. But North Carolina, on both sides of the political aisle, whoever's treasurer, whatever party, it's been pretty conservative, and have people who like you who will blow the whistle. But what about this federal government and these tax cuts that clearly are going to lead us into a time of deficits that's going to be tough? What is the nonpartisan way for people who are worried about that to bond together and work together on this problem?
Well, number one is to obviously be involved and be informed. And you know, we spoke a moment ago about former Treasurer Harlan Bowles, and it's reported this is the people need something to hold on to right now. And this is what's reported to have happened 20, 30 years ago. Harlan Bowles, who was a Democrat, considered one of the best state treasurers of the United States in the 20th century, not just North Carolina, it's reported that he would go and visit with the Republican Party chair before filing deadline and say, "I want you to find the best qualified person to run against me for treasurer. Because anything can happen in a presidential election. And this is such an important job. I want the best possible qualified person to run against me in case I lose." I don't know of any better example of what public service is than what Harlan Bowles used to do.
I didn't know that story. That is phenomenal. A great story. I hope it is really true. If we had political leaders who viewed their role in government as, well, if the wave is going to take me out, I'd sure like for the guy who beats, or guy or gal who beats me, to be somebody who's smart and knows what they're doing, even if our politics are different. That's great.
And let me say, because I'm sure we're running out of time, is that solving these problems, like anything that you've ever tried to solve, it's not going to change your relationship with your wife or family. It's not going to change you spiritually or your financial condition. I'm doing this on behalf of the invisible, the people who are out there while we're doing this show, who are educating our kids and protecting us from criminals and paving our roads and all the other core functions. And the comfort that I get is as stressful as this might seem from the outside of trying to reform healthcare, is that I've come to the conclusion in my life that as long as you have something, somebody to love, something to do every day, and something to look forward to, you can declare victory.
Well, I'm so sorry we have to end, but that is a great way to end. Dale Falwell, thanks for your service, and thanks for sharing your thoughts and with us here in Chapel Hill today.
Look forward to coming back on. Thank you.
Thanks to Dale Falwell, and thanks to you for listening. This is D.G. Martin who's talking, and I'll be back here before you know it.